Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Schon mal eine Ferienunterkunft gebucht, die der reinste Horror war?
Das sieht gar nicht aus wie auf den Fotos.
Ah, ist da eine Tür hinter all den Spinnen?
Dann probier eine App, mit der ein Happy End gewiss ist.
Ah, perfekt.
Alles gut, du hast bei Fevo direkt gebucht.
Lives Less Ordinary is the podcast from the BBC World Service, bringing you extraordinary personal stories from around the globe. Search for Lives Less Ordinary wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumhi ek tay The Fifth Floor farnak amidi sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. These days, it's so hard to know what is real and what is not, especially on social media. Have a listen to this clip and see if you can recognize this voice.
Republicans have been trying to push nonpartisan and Democratic voters to participate in their primary. What a bunch of malarkey.
This sounds like U.S. President Joe Biden, but it isn't Joe Biden. It's a deep fake, a piece of audio that's been manipulated to make it sound just like him. Deep fakes are one of the latest tools in disinformation wars, but not the only one. In this episode, we'll talk about how disinformation is created and spread around the world with the help of three experts. In the studio with me is Olga Robinson, disinformation analyst with BBC Monitoring. She specializes in Russian affairs. And in Miami, we have Luis Fajardo, also from BBC Monitoring, but he looks at stories coming from Latin America. And joining us from Lagos in Nigeria is Olaranke Alo, who's part of the local disinformation unit there. Welcome, everyone. So Hi. Great to have you.
Yeah, good to be here.
Yeah.
Good to be here, yeah.
Yes, very interesting topic. Let's dig in. So have any of you accidentally ever shared a piece of disinformation? Olga, let's start with you.
I bet I have.
I think we all have.
I live on social media, and because social media is essentially part of my day job. And there have been times when I was about to share something with my husband because I just saw something and I was thinking, no way. Oh, just look at this. And I had this very emotional reaction to it. And then I thought, oh, hang on a minute. I'm reacting emotionally here. Maybe I should check where this is actually coming from. And there was one case when I saw a story that, you know, everyone has biases and it sort of played into my personal bias. And I thought, okay, this headline reads like exactly what is going on. So I did share it with my husband and then I quickly retracted and realized that I just shared misleading information. And I was like, oh, sorry.
Yeah, they have very catchy headlines and you just feel, oh, wow, it grabs your attention. And you just want to share it. And what I find is family WhatsApp groups are just this ecosystem thriving with disinformation.
Oh, family is the worst. But also, I mean, they're all lovely. I love my family. But there have been cases where I remember sharing a story, an investigation we've just done. And that was an investigation to disinformation, kind of about viral rumors about Ukraine. And my family were like, oh, we thought that was real. Thanks for sharing. And I thought, oh my gosh, we've been investigating that network for 3 months. And it just never occurred to me to actually to warn my relatives that this is not real if you're seeing it.
Luis, I saw you smiling and kind of like nodding your head. Any personal experiences you want to share?
Well, Olga says that her family groups in social media are a key potential trouble zone. In my case, It's WhatsApp groups I share with old school friends. I'm from Colombia originally, and in Colombia, like in many other places, politics is very, very passionate now. And so many times I've seen supposed news there in that group, and I'm saying, wow, I have this very, very, very big piece of news I need to share with anyone. So many times we have the temptation to be one of the first to share them. But of course, the responsible thing to do is to double check. And then many, many, many times I've been about to share information, which especially in Latin America, it's all over the place. The amount of disinformation on every possible subject, from football to politics to life and death matters to the most irrelevant matters, is just a tsunami of disinformation going around.
Hola, Ranke, any temptations on your side?
Well, on the contrary, right, I would say I've not had to, because I have this reputation amongst, you know, my family and friends. And so because they know you're a journalist, okay, you know what, let's wait. We have a journalist amongst us. So that has actually reduced my temptation to have that quick finger. So when I say it on social media, I go digging in because I know that I have a responsibility. I have people who are chatting me up. What do you think? Have you seen this? Have the BBC reported this? I do my double check over time because of that responsibility that is, you know, being put on my shoulders.
Well done. So, Olga, back to you. When we talk about disinformation, what are we exactly talking about?
So disinformation, as we usually define it, is spreading misleading or false information deliberately with an intent. And people do it for a variety of reasons. It could be for financial profit, for so-called engagement farming, or it could be for personal gain, for vanity reasons, or it could be for political reasons.
So it's about the source, basically.
It's about
how it was created.
It's about the source and it's about the intent. Mm-hmm. So why is the person sharing? And whenever you see a viral claim that is potentially misleading or suspect and doesn't looks off to you, you first of all trying to understand where this is coming from, who started spreading it, and why.
So I want to get into some examples of disinformation in your regions of specialty. Olaranka, let's start with you.
We recently did a disinformation story on public health scare about a televangelist who, you know, is spreading disinformation about the malaria vaccine. The WHO had just announced that they were going to distribute a malaria vaccine across African countries. And then we began to see this WhatsApp audio being spread among school groups and, you know, people warning parents, don't go for this vaccine. This is a plan to depopulate. So we began to dig in deep. What is this? This is disinformation. And then we saw the scale. It was being shared widely. And we also saw TikTok videos that had hundreds of thousands of views. So this is just one for public health. We've also seen political disinformation, especially during the elections in this region. When the elections are coming, you know, it is a time for people to spread disinformation claims, whether for political gains and some of them for commercial gains. So these are the things we've seen in our region. And then we see that there's a network of people, you know, spreading the same disinformation stories, and then they have something in common. Maybe they are from the same political parties, you know, sometimes when it's about political. When sometimes it's about public health scare, are they from the same community? Are they from the same religious groups? We see this pattern. So those are the kind of disinformation campaigns we see, you know, mostly in Africa region and, of course, Nigeria.
And Luis, what about Latin America? What's going on there?
Latin America has, like I was saying before, a massive problem with disinformation. It's not surprising given the enormous importance that social media has in Latin America. I think Latin American leaders were among the first in the world to discover the political power of social media and, of course, the potential for abuse. I think one of the newer things now is that many of the social media disinformation stories in Latin America, because of the nature of the subject they're covering, they're moving into other parts of the world. And I can think of two examples. The disinformation that developed around migrants moving to the U.S., especially there's a jungle region between Colombia and Panama, literally hundreds of thousands of people every year moving there, trying to reach the U.S. and coming from all parts of the world. And it has become, in a very, very strange way, a social media hotspot for TikTok videos and many people documenting their journey. And one of the things that has happened is that many people are taking advantage of the hopes of the migrants to spread a lot of very, very false information, saying that they will be received immediately as soon as they arrive at the U.S. border. And all this disinformation is moving across social media. And some people are suggesting that one of the reasons you're seeing a historic level of migration is because so many people are falling for this disinformation. Also, something we're seeing right now in the U.S. presidential election campaign. Some Latin American immigrants have become U.S. citizens and now participate actively in U.S. elections. And the disinformation they receive from their countries of origin sometimes determines the way they will vote in a U.S. election and have a very big impact on a U.S. election.
What about in Russia? What are the topics?
Well, obviously, Ukraine is a massive topic on all sorts of Russian sources, from Russian TV to social media. And I think one of the recent iterations of it that I found really striking happened literally in the first hour after reports started coming in about an attack in the Krakow City Hall in Moscow. That's one of the concert halls. And it was a tragedy that caused over 140 deaths. But in the first hour, as loads of images were coming in from the site of the attack that was later claimed by the Islamic State group, what I was seeing on Telegram was an alternative reality that started building. Essentially, the main thrust of it was to blame Ukraine. That kind of snowballed. And in the next few hours, we had fake clip was showed on one of state TV channels. It then only became worse, like the next day, when it was President Putin talking about Ukraine being somehow to blame for their attack.
We all know that disinformation has always existed. With information comes disinformation, but it seems that social media has made the situation worse. At least it allows it to spread like wildfire. Any examples of how social media has made it worse in your regions? Please share with me, Luis.
Yes, one of the things that has been vexing for people trying to look at this is how some of the social media networks that are used are very, very difficult to monitor. Again, the perfect example is WhatsApp chains. In many Latin American elections, it said that these chains containing information that sometimes was completely, completely far away from truth was moving around, reaching millions of people. And a lot of people in the mainstream media and in a lot of other sectors of society didn't even realize this was happening underground, so to speak. And that's why many of the big political events that have been influenced by disinformation catch everyone by surprise, because it's very, very difficult to figure out what is being shared in these networks that are in many ways private by definition, you know?
Yeah. In my region as well, social media has made it quite difficult because disinformation campaigns are being monetized. So you have a lot of people wanting to make money off it. So they recruit soldiers, you know, they recruit a lot of people. So when thousands of people are saying the same thing because of the money they have received, you almost want to believe it's true.
And I think also the thing, it doesn't help when, for example, on social media, there's incentive for people to actually post comments that are emotive and make people click and spread it further. So, for example, we know that on X at the moment, which is formerly Twitter, you can get paid for your post. And that means that the more engagement you get, the more money you generate. And so there's an incentive for people to actually share kind of posts that
provocative
posts.
I know there is this jargon called information laundering. I had never heard it before until today. Tell me about it, Olga.
So information laundering is a term that describes the process of when disinformation is kind of planted in one place, in a very obscure account, and then it gets a fake news article is written based on that very dodgy account. And then the article planted by this fake news website gets picked up by genuine users or propaganda spreaders or disinformation spreaders. And then it starts being reported as oh, American media are reporting this, or Brazilian media are reporting this. So there is essentially a distance that is being created between the original source of disinformation and the kind of general audience. I think in November last year, a YouTube video popped up, and it was talking about Zelensky buying two yachts that cost $75 million. And the suggestion was that this is where the US aid money is going to. And then that YouTube fake was almost immediately picked up by this quite obscure website. And from there, it spread like wildfire. It had millions of views. And then a few weeks later, we heard a couple of members of Congress, US Congress, repeating it publicly.
Wow, how this is insane.
But it's the whole story of, you know, of unpicking it, how one piece of misinformation went from an obscure YouTube channel with a handful of followers to a congressman.
Yeah, to the halls of power. It's just, wow, blows your mind. This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
If you had the chance to win a life-changing amount of money, you'd go for it, right? Oh, but it's televised and you can't trust anyone. I'm Ella Alshamahi, one of the new presenters of The Conversation from the BBC World Service. We speak to incredible women from different parts of the world about their shared experiences. Join me for a special episode which finds out what really goes on behind the scenes with reality TV contestants from The Traitors and Survivor. Search for The Conversation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Farhana Khamidi, and in this episode, we are talking about disinformation and how it's changing the way journalists work in South America, Russia, and Nigeria, with the help of my colleagues Luis, Olga, and Olaranke. I'm sure there are emerging trends that do concern all of you working in this field. Olaranke, any emerging trends that worry you or you have concerns about?
Are the emerging trends in Nigeria and Africa at large right now, I think, is the generative AI, because of the growing youth population and a lot of technology advancement. You know, I would always refer to the election because it's still fresh. And of course, when disinformation campaigns go a long way in Africa, it's usually during the elections, because that is when it travels further. So, you know, we saw the fake videos of campaigns of Hollywood actors, you know, supposedly, you know, campaigning for political actors in Nigeria. I came across while researching, because South Africa election is coming in May, and then while researching, you know, some of the disinformation campaigns that we've seen videos of, you know, Donald Trump campaigning for some political parties, deep fake videos that are being shared widely because of the election. So it's more to distort the narrative for them. These deep fakes are being shared widely, and people were beginning to believe it.
Wow. Luis, is that also one of the concerns in your region, or one of the emerging trends?
Certainly, the problem of deepfakes is also very concerning in Latin America. Particularly this year, we're having a lot of elections in the region, and we're expecting a lot of this to happen. But I think another of the trends we're seeing is that politicians in the region, from all kinds of political angles, are completely discrediting any kind of traditional news gathering. And that makes the situation, I think, even more complicated. You're seeing presidents from the left and presidents from the right using exactly the same language. They're saying the media is the enemy of the people. If the citizens in Latin America and in other parts of the world are constantly hearing this, they become conspiratorial. They do not trust any type of organized or professional attempt at looking at the news or trying to sort out which news is real or which news is fake. And a lot of people are thrown into the hands of these individuals or organizations or whatever, for whatever reason they have, that are peddling this kind of fake news. And many people in Latin America and elsewhere will say, well, everyone is saying lies. Why shouldn't I trust this guy? I mean, why is this guy more or less trustworthy than any other person that I've been told that I need to listen to try to establish what is the truth and what is fake. So in this situation, I think it's even more difficult for society to defend itself against this situation of extreme disinformation.
Yeah, you wanted to add something to that, Olga.
No, I wanted to add a bit of kind of Russian perspective. It's not an emerging trend, but it's an important ongoing trend. It's around weaponization of the term fake news, because Russia, since the start of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, and even before that, has been using this term to effectively ban independent reporting of the war in Ukraine and generally persecute people who don't agree with the Kremlin. And literally, pretty much every day, I hear stories or read stories involving people who are facing time in jail just because they have discussed atrocities or described the war in Ukraine as war. And Russia is not the only country in the world that uses this kind of techniques and has turned the term fake news into a kind of a political term.
I think the only global war, like the main global war that is happening in the world, is the war of information at the moment.
Yeah, the war on truth. Mm. And when it comes to AI, I think it's a very interesting phenomenon of how disinformation spreaders are using and adapting technology, new technology that appears. And what is interesting, in the past year alone, we have seen, and my team has investigated, multiple Russia-linked operations that were essentially covert influence operations. And we have increasingly seen them using AI, and not just to create deepfake videos, but also deepfake audio. And also, I think in the most probably interesting way of using it, also to create articles to populate fake news websites, so that you open a website and it looks like, oh, there are 40,000 articles on it. It must have been running for a while. And then you check on domain information and you realize it's only been up for a couple of months. And the articles have been, they're not translated, they're not nicked. So when you do actual quick Googling of bits of the article, nothing comes up.
They're AI-generated articles.
They are AI-generated articles. And we know, because one of the operations was, by mistake, left instructions to the chatbot at the end of the articles. In one case, it was actually at the start, and it said, please write an article with a conservative from a conservative angle criticizing Macron's policy on, I can't remember what.
Wow. But how is all this affecting your jobs as journalists? This is just, wow, what a webton tangle, Luis.
It certainly makes it more difficult, but more interesting, I'd say. Mm. I mean, there's
you like the challenge.
Of course. And certainly, you can actually gain a lot of information by looking at what kind of disinformation is being moved around and who's moving it around. So in that case, I mean, you have to make the best of a complicated situation. And if you're trying to understand the media environment, well, that's one way you can possibly help in that direction. But certainly it's very, very complicated. And I think it's even at a personal level, when people are so absolutely massively distrustful of the news that's circulating around, they're often asking you, I mean, are you part of this? Are you part of the whole disinformation thing? And I said, no, I'm not really I'm not trying to spread fake news in my job or anything. But I think it's an interesting time to be in, certainly.
You agree, Olaranke?
Yes, in this part of the world as well, it's more difficult, you know, to come out as a journalist, because everyone on social media right now, almost everyone, is a journalist.
So
investigative journalist, of course. So that's the umbrella they use to cover their tracks. So to drive traffic towards whatever form of disinformation they are spreading. And so because people wake up in this part of the world, social media. They go to social media for news. They want the breaking news. They want who is bringing it out first. So because of that, you know, nobody knows who to trust and believe anymore.
Mm.
So it makes it really difficult. So it means we have to double whatever it is we're doing, you know, do the fact checks, the long-term disinformation stories. We have to continue to do what we do, you know, to put the light on those falsehoods out there.
Olga?
I don't know, for me, I absolutely love my job. I've been covering disinformation for the past 5 years, and I've been pretty much analysing Russian media the past 11. And it's never easy. And it's really easy to, if you're unprepared, I think it's very easy to lose your faith in humanity when you do this kind of job. But you also, when working on stories, when you get feedback from people who you've actually helped. So, and we do occasionally get feedback from people who say, I've showed this article, I've been having an argument with my friend or my sister, and I showed your explainer as to why this particular claim is wrong. And it really helped. And we now got to an agreement. And that really is heartwarming. But there's also a toll you pay. You have to pay, because you look at some of the worst content out there. You know, disinformation can be graphic, and it does have a mental health dimension to it. And in some cases, also security and safety aspect, because like in the case of Russia and Ukraine, the Russian journalists who call openly the war in Ukraine a war are potentially liable for prosecution, and that's 15 years in prison as a top sentence. So it's an absolute privilege to report on disinformation and investigate it and explain and try to shed the light on it for people, but it can also come at a cost.
Such valuable work you're all doing. And, you know, listening to you, yes, some of the techniques people are using is scary, terrifies me, but it's not all doom and gloom. There are things that people can do, and you can be, you don't have to be passive. You can be more proactive in this field. And well, who better to give us advice than you three experts? If each one of you could give one piece of valuable advice to our listeners when it comes to disinformation, what would that be? Luis, let's start with you.
Wait 30 seconds before republishing something.
Hola, Ranke, what is your advice?
Check, double check, triple check. It can never be enough.
Mm-hmm. Olga?
Be your own Sherlock Holmes. It's amazing what just a couple of searches can do. You can do reverse image searching.
I love that.
I do it like... I do it probably excessively during the day because so much disinformation is spreads through memes and visuals. All you need to do is to just put your picture in through reverse image search. There are so many platforms who can do it. And there it is. It comes up as an old piece of footage. You don't share it. And it's not rocket science. And with some perseverance, you can get amazing results.
Thanks to Olaranke Alo, Olga Robinson, and Luis Fajardo. That's all from me, Farenaik Amidi. And the Fifth Floor team this week was Ali Chajoya and Caroline Ferguson. The sound engineers were Bob Nettles and Neva Misirian. You've been listening to a documentary from the BBC World Service.
If you had the chance to win a life-changing amount of money, you'd go for it, right? Oh, but it's televised and you can't trust anyone. I'm Ella Alshamahi, one of the new presenters of The Conversation from the BBC World Service. We speak to incredible women from different parts of the world about their shared experiences. Join me for a special episode which finds out what really goes on behind the scenes with reality TV contestants from The Traitors and Survivor. Search for The Conversation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.